Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of free Washington, Spokane Valley, brought to you by the committee to elect Matt Shea Republican in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right, and it's about wrong. It's about us doing the hard work to implement freedom because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. But we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Exodus 15:3 says, the Lord is a warrior. The Lord is his name. I've talked quite a bit about, are we warriors? Are we out on that front line? Spiritually, are we ready to be out on that front line? I mean, that's even more interesting question. I want to talk today, though, about the fact that the physical manifestation of the spiritual battle has been going on, especially in this region, for a very, very long time. The first Irish that came to Washington State, came to Montana, actually had the idea of building a new Ireland, a place where they could be free to worship the Lord as they saw fit, to escape the tyranny of England, where it needs to be, you know, reminded. I think people forget these things, but in the 1660s, there were laws that were passed for essentially to combat piracy on the high seas. And it was really kind of the first civil asset forfeiture, if you will, that people, you know, could have their boat cargo seized without due process. Then later in the 1600s, 1695, I believe, to 1728, if my memory serves me correctly, the Irish were subject to something called the penal laws, where you couldn't own a horse over a certain amount. You couldn't own land. In fact, the Shea family, very likely during this period of time, lost the land that the family had had for generations. And they also had something very peculiar. They said the Irish could not be armed. And it was really an attempt, the penal laws, to stamp out Irish culture, but it actually had the opposite effect. People began to relish their culture, do everything they could to preserve it, but it also highlighted the fact that disarming people leads to tyranny. So when the Irish came to America in first big waves after the famine, and right before the Civil War in the United States, they came with this idea of freedom. And now we know from a lot of great research done in history that the Irish during that period of time formed the Irish Brigade, fought on the side of the Union. There were also Irish on the side of the Confederacy. Sometimes they fought against each other, Irish against Irish, instead of fighting the English, which still enslaved their homeland at that time. But that was the first time in generations that they could truly fight with arms. And it emboldened them in respect to freedom. And so when they came to Montana after the draft riots toward the end of the Civil War in New York that soured many to the Irish and really led to a lot of a resurgence of anti-Irish sentiment, first showed up as the Know-Nothings before the Civil War. And then after this kind of resurgence after these draft riots, and so a lot of the Irish just said, we're not going to stay in New York, we're just going to head west. And when they came west, they ran into a group of people who believed the same way English nobility believed, that they were self-appointed to watch over the resources of the vast western United States, and that it was their duty to make sure that everybody followed that. And they started a vigilante group, actually, in Virginia City and other places in Montana, and were part of a secret society. And this is actually laid out in a great book called The Immortal Irishman by Tim Egan. And it's about Thomas Francis Marr, who is kind of one of the heroes of Ireland, the guy that made the tricolor flag. But they had this fight against this entrenched nobility, this self-appointed nobility. Even though they had fled Ireland, they came to the United States, and they still ran into it in the West because they thought they were going to form kind of a new Ireland in the West of the United States. Well, that same self-appointed nobility that they faced then, their ancestors, literally direct ancestors, are who we're facing today. And I hope that we understand that all of the ridiculous attacks that you see in the media, all of the attempt to, you know, organize the left to foment violence and chaos, all of this is not coming from chaos. It's actually very well coordinated. But the point for us as Christians is that these people, these self-appointed aristocracy, is the physical manifestation, at least one part of it, of the spiritual battle that we fight as Christians, because these are the people that want to take away your ability to worship God as you see fit. They want to take away your ability to defend yourself against tyranny. They want to take away your ability to produce wealth with your property so that you can fight back against them. And it's important to put a name on this. I mean, it's very clearly documented historically. And it's also important as Christians to realize, I heard somebody a couple days ago make a fairly uneducated comment. That's putting it nicely. They said, oh, the folks in the media, they're really trying to do the right thing. They're really trying to just get their stories done and get the information out to the public. No, they're not. To a large extent, the media is intentionally, with an agenda and malice aforethought, not just trying to shift opinion, but trying to stifle opinion, trying to destroy, smear, and tell only part of the truth. And that's what I think a lot of Americans are seeing today is, you know, against the mainstream media, they see when this happens and they're like, well, yeah, that wasn't accurate. That wasn't the whole truth. But understand something, that they, the mainstream media, have become part of this self-appointed aristocracy. And because of that, they want to force people to listen to some of their garbage viewpoints. They want to force people to accept wholesale their emotional feeling reasons for their belief system. They don't want to listen to facts. They don't want to listen to logic. They don't want to listen to reason. They want to listen to emotion. And as Christians, we need to be targeting those things in prayer. We need to be targeting that hearts would be changed, that people would be open to and sensitive to the Holy Spirit and not taking wholesale what is put out in the media. You'll notice that the Spokesman Review tries to do an article every week smearing yours truly. In some way, shape, or form, either by throwing my name into a story that has nothing to do with anything that I'm doing in the legislature, or if it does have something to do with what I'm doing in the legislature, is grossly mischaracterized. But now you know why, because it's part of this self-appointed aristocracy that believes they know better how you should live your lives. They know better what freedoms you should or should not have. They know better how you should use your property. They know better how your money should be spent. but they don't know better. And freedom means that we need to stop them from trying to say they know better. Freedom means we need to come against the very definition of tyranny, which is this political correctness that tries to make us self-censor, that we're afraid to say something. I'm going to talk a little bit about this next week as well, but it's important that we are very clear on this. We don't mince words. This is not an accident. This is intentional. And that brings us to your daily intelligence briefing. In the Middle East, talked about this shakeup with Iranian and Saudi leadership. And now the Saudis are having a massive anti-terrorism conference. The United States was invited to that. But essentially, the Sunni nations of the world now are coming together against so-called radical terror. So really what you're seeing, though, is, I believe, a coalition building against Iran. That's really what it's about. I would also mention, and very interestingly, at least to me, that there's a report on Debka file that thousands of elite Chinese troops are being deployed from China to Syria. And under the auspices of combating Uyghur Islamists, okay, and it's spelled U-I-G-H-U-R, okay, so if you're not familiar with the term. But in the western part of China, there is actually a significant Islamic population, and these Uyghur Islamists have caused the Chinese great headaches, just putting it mildly. And to be very specific, Debka file is saying that these are elite Chinese troops, and they're accusing Turkey of fomenting or backing this Uyghur separatist movement and unrest in the western part of China. And since some of these Uyghurs are now in Syria, we got to go get them while they're in Syria. Okay, understand what this means, though. A projection of Chinese force is now happening in the Middle East. That is a significant change. And we all need to pay attention to that, because the armies of the East in the Middle East, perhaps you might be remembering something written in Scripture about that. Also on the international front, the North Koreans launch an ICBM that carried a dummy nuclear warhead. Now, this is again being reported on Debka file, but it hasn't really been talked about in the media in the way it should. It was a 50-minute flight time. Okay, understand what this means. Okay, it flew with only 1,000 miles. It was a 50-minute flight time. How is that possible? Well, that's because the launch arc was approximately 2,800 miles, even though it only went horizontally 1,000 miles. Hope that makes sense to everybody out there. What that means to us is that type of an intercontinental ballistic missile not only could carry a nuclear warhead, it could carry a nuclear warhead to almost anywhere in the world, but more specifically for us, to EMP altitude over the United States of America. That's what this means. And Trump said, we'll take care of it. Okay. You know, I get that we're going to be quiet about this, about what we would actually take action on. But this is a clear threat to the United States. It's a clear threat. And they're talking that it's a clear threat to the United States. So this is unlike some of the other discussions that have happened in other wars and other countries. This is directly aimed at the United States of America. And Congress, I think, needs to take a long, hard look at this and debate on it, of whether or not there is still some diplomatic options open, or this is going to lead to war. And I'll tell you, it really seems like we are headed for a year coming up that is going to be very challenging. Next on the international front, and probably maybe getting a little bit redundant, but I'm going to keep bringing it up. You know, this Russian spike in radioactive pollution that has drifted over Europe, something obviously happened there. And the Russians are being pretty tight-lipped apparently about it. We need to find out. Also on the international front, Venezuela is in official default, 2,400% inflation, but it's just kind of dropped off the radar screen. I don't know why. What, nobody wants to talk about it? I don't know. Also on the national front, Yellowstone to Yukon, Y2Y, is coming back. There's a study that's being done about how to connect corridors so that 50% of the Earth, 50% of the Earth, is left without people. So we would become apparently the zoo. The animals would look in at us. I'm kind of stunned at how these ideas just keep recirculating as if they're good. The fact of the matter is human beings have actually managed wild land better than wild land just being out there on its own. It's the truth. And everybody that is in agriculture, everybody that has done forest management knows that is a fact. They don't talk about the fact that Native Americans used to help manage the forests. It's just kind of this idea that we're going to just let this rewilding, that we're just going to let it go back to what it was. It's not just ludicrous, it's dangerous. It's really anti-human if you think about it. Which brings us to the next thing, which is a little unbelievable. A couple credit rating agencies. Okay, so these are the agencies that say, hey, Citi, you are officially, credit worthy to get bonds and at the best rates, and you're not going bankrupt. These are the credit agencies that evaluate the credit worthiness of cities. They are now saying that they are going to downgrade cities that are refusing to take climate change protection measures and steps. This is the kind of extortion for what has already become a debunked idea. Climate has always changed. Greenland was named Greenland for a reason. Now it has ice on it. Huh. But the fact of the matter is, these credit rating agencies trying to hold people hostage, hold cities hostage over climate change, like you're trying to ram it down people's throats. So we're going to keep watching this, because I have a feeling this might be a way that they're going to try to force cities to spend money on so-called climate change. And this is just another example of how when the left loses ideologically, they come and try and ram it down people's throats. Also on the national front, ISIS and Al-Qaeda are issuing holiday threats. I want to highlight a couple things. There's been a couple videos out there. They are saying that, basically America needs to watch out. They've threatened the Vatican. But specifically, these threats are focused on Paris, London, and New York, these latest ones. And one thing that we can expect just analyzing this is that there probably will be some sort of a threat that is carried out in one of these cities. And these attacks we need to be ready for as Americans. We don't need to be living in fear, but we just need to be ready for them. They've been, when they've put these things out, generally it's been followed up on. And it's important to understand that those are the things that if certain people in America are not going to take seriously, we need to as individual Americans, that we can be responsible for our own actions and how we deal with a situation like that. Also on the national front, Slaughterbots. And if you have not seen this, take a look at it. Just go online, go to start page, type in Slaughterbots, take a look at the movie. So what we've been trying to warn about for years about weaponizing drones and robots, what it could look like. And I'm not going to give it away, but if you get a chance, take a look at it. It's very thought-provoking. We need to address these issues now. Which brings me to the next thing on the national front, and that is flying cars by 2020. And you heard that right. There will be flying cars by 2020. We've talked about this. We've reported on this. And now England acknowledging this, specifically because a British company has entered the race to have these cars, this is called the Neo X-Craft, ready in 2 years. Now, interestingly enough as well, Uber has also stepped in and may try to create a fleet of flying drone cars, so then they don't have to have drivers anymore. Boy, this is 20 years ago. I mean, this was science fiction. It is becoming increasingly science fact. Also on the national front, Department of Interior and the Trump administration are taking a different tack on all-terrain vehicle use on public land. Now, I've been fighting for this for years. We got the ATV bill that expanded the areas which ATVs could drive. And now they are rolling back a lot of the Obama-era policies that tried to say, you know, Forest Service roads where cars were allowed on, they said ATVs are not allowed on them, even though that was very dubious legally because counties actually retained authority over those Forest Service roads. That said, that goes way back. That's literally 80 years old. You can go look it up yourself. But the Trump administration is saying, okay, we are going to open this back up again for access into these rugged areas, especially on not improved roadways, but in primitive roadways. Because the reason the Forest Service stopped the use on these lands and these roads was by saying that they needed some sort of an environmental impact, even though the environmental impact had been done for a larger vehicle, cars, trucks. They said a new one had to be done for these. Well, that's just kind of ridiculous. If they're going to be staying on the same road, what does it matter? Well, the whole point was they didn't want all-terrain vehicle access up in these areas, despite the fact that that helps with the fighting of forest fires, despite the fact that most people here in the West are sick and tired of gates going up everywhere, and we do want to access our land. Now, some of these places need to be closed off for horse traffic and foot traffic. I get that. That's great. But there needs to be places, too, where you can go on an ATV ride. And I'm really happy about this. It's coming from Free Range. Check it out. The Trump administration doing a great job pointing things back in the right direction for access for all people on public land. On the regional front, the Democrats had filed a bunch of PDC complaints, Public Disclosure Commission complaints, against Republicans as retaliation for all the ones that had been filed against them by a private citizen trying to hold them accountable. Well, now the Attorney General is settling for a lot less money for frequent violators. In other words, you get like a frequent violator discount. It's coming to us from We the Govern. Check out the article there. The administration of Jay Inslee and also the Attorney General Bob Ferguson are really politicizing those two offices. It's really kind of unfortunate, especially in the respect of the Attorney General. Also on the regional front, before we get to our guest today, there's a couple of things I want to bring up to you. One of them, very interesting, the Bundys. Now, there was a article out a while back. This is, and when I say a while, I'm talking like 2 years ago. And then there are also some radio show hosts who came out and who said that the Bundys owed millions of dollars in fees. That's why the federal government went there to do this enforcement action, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it's come out now. It's part of the trial. A memorandum from the Bureau of Land Management, January 21st, 2011. It's the date. And the actual amount of grazing fees. Now, they call them trespass fees. That's the official name for them. They're grazing fees. Okay. The official amount of grazing fees that was actually owed by the Bundy family was $8,815.50, with a $10 service charge on top of that, and then an administrative fee for investigation of $283,000. I mean, $283,000, almost $284,000, coming to a total of $292,000, essentially $300,000 total. But the actual grazing fees owed was only almost $9,000. But even with that, on top of that, $300,000 is not millions of dollars. And so that coming out in court really has debunked a lot of the radio show hosts that were out there, a lot. And we were talking about this years ago. Really, they've been debunked now. And they really honestly should come out and apologize for misleading the public, saying that these ranchers were so far in arrears. And also on the regional front, Ammon Bundy, Ryan Payne, also Ryan Bundy earlier, but Ammon Bundy released today in Las Vegas. Now, I want to tell you kind of the inside story here a little bit, what we're hearing. There was a hearing over the weekend, a sealed hearing, in regards to a 1,000-page motion to dismiss the case because the federal government had withheld exculpatory evidence. It's a fancy word for saying evidence that would tend to go against them, them being the federal government. And the judge apparently listened to that. Now, we don't know much more than that. They're very tight-lipped since it was a sealed hearing. But the fact of the matter is, with the release of Ammon Bundy today, that would seem to me, just looking at cases in the past, to signal that they believe that there's going to be a mistrial declared. They're releasing Ammon Bundy, and there may be no further prosecution. Wow, what a vindication that would be. So I wanted to bring that up before we get our guest on, because this is a big, big change. Lastly, on the local front, once again, that Planned Parenthood sex ed curriculum in downtown Spokane was rejected, but we need to be vigilant. They're going to come back. They're going to wait till people are asleep and not paying attention. They're going to try to bring it back. We need to be vigilant. And that is the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Oh, and I want to be that God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American every day. You know, don't you? I sure do. And thank you to all of you out there that have been supporting the show, praying for us. Make sure you go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US, like the page, share it with your friends and family. And if you want to support the show, you can go to VoteShea.com. Well, my guest today, and I've been talking about the 51st state for a long time, especially the state of liberty. Well, my guest today is once again Mark Barrett with the state of Jefferson, who's been doing this a lot longer than we have, it seems like. And just great to have you back on the show. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great, Matt. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm doing terrific. I'm so excited to talk about this because after the most recent elections, there was just another huge surge. We have got to split the state of Washington. We've got to have a state of liberty, and we now have a flag. I don't know if you've seen it. We had 1,000 people vote on it. We have an official state flag. We're almost to a final vote on an official state seal. What's going on down with the state of Jefferson? I mean, where are you guys at? I know you were looking at doing some court battles. If you could, tell the listeners a little bit about it.
Well, we went into federal court against the state of California for lack of representation and dilution of vote as a result of the lack of action on the part of the legislature. You know, we had 23 counties sign petitions. We had an email drive, a phone call drive, tens of thousands of emails, hundreds of thousands of phone calls, thousands of personal visits, and not one single legislator even called to find out what we wanted or why we wanted it or why we felt we needed it. So after that, we realized that we weren't going to get anything out of our own government, so we sued them in federal court, and our allegation is that in California, one state senator can't possibly represent a million people. He represents the money, okay, but not the people. And so we're in federal court right now with that lawsuit.
What's your prognosis for this? I mean, do you think that the courts are actually going to listen to you, or do you think it's going to have to go as far up as possible, maybe to the United States Supreme Court, to get this adjudicated?
Well, we mapped out a legal strategy so that this will go to the United States Supreme Court. It has to. Even if we win in federal court, California is going to appeal. And if California wins, we're going to appeal. So what we did was we used the United States Code, Title 28, Section 2284, I think it is. And that says that any case that regards a state legislature or federal legislature alleging lack of representation or dilution of vote demands a three-judge court. And there's another section in the United States Code that says the result of any action from a three-judge court, the United States Supreme Court has primary jurisdiction in the appeal. So we will go to the Supreme Court, and we're going to win. Because one thing the state has never said, we're saying that rural counties have no representation, and one thing they've never said is, yes, you do. They've never even argued their side of the argument.
I love the fact that you're taking this tack on it, because that's really what it's all about. The fact that there is a significant portion of the population that is not truly being represented, and it's been going on for years. If you could, for the listeners, tell a little bit about the history of the state of Jefferson, when it kind of came to a culmination, and how, you know, as it was gaining steam, a big event in the world happened.
Well, it was gaining steam in 1941, of course, and then on December 7th, Pearl Harbor happened, and that was the end of it. And actually, in 1861, Andre Pico got a state split bill through the California legislature, signed by Governor Walker, sent back to Congress for their approval as Article 4, Section 3 demands. And then the South seceded from the North, and that was the end of that. I mean, it's just been a really kind of a string of odd luck. But this time we're going to win. We're going into court. We're going to win. And this will affect the entire nation, because when the Supreme Court talks, everybody has to listen.
They do. And you talk about representation. How many counties are part of the movement right now?
We have 23 counties right now that are active in the state split effort.
And for Liberty State, we have about 21 counties. What is the enthusiasm across those counties to actually split? Is it only a small portion of the population, or do you have a pretty significant majority down there? Because, you know, a lot of times, you know, the left will try to, you know, poo-poo it or marginalize the efforts like this and say, oh, it's just never going to happen. These are just a bunch of people out to lunch. But they might be talking about quite a big portion of the population.
You know, I don't. You never know how many people in any given county, but I know in Shasta County we have around 40,000 signatures. So, you know, in some of the counties where we're counting signatures, we know how many we have. And then we had counties that voted for it, the boards of supervisors, or what you guys call the county commissioners, voted for it. So in those counties, we're less sure of how many individuals favor it. But I'll tell you what, everywhere I go, and I go to a lot of places to speak about this, there aren't many people that are against it, in the last several meetings I've gone to, nobody's against it. I mean, this state is a debt ship sinking with all hands on board. Businesses are fleeing, productive people are leaving, our children are leaving, our economies are in ruins. No one's against it that I talk to.
And it's interesting because when you talk to people one-on-one, you know, everybody wants this to happen, right? It's when people are asked publicly, sometimes they kind of hedge a little bit. But here in Liberty State, it's about 70, running about 74% support based on over 10,000 people that weighed in on a survey. And that's a significant portion of the population. And I think a lot of people have been driven to this by regulation and taxes. How is it for you guys down there in Northern California? I can't even imagine. I mean, Washington's bad enough, but California, wow.
Well, I mean, you know, we have no Second Amendment in California. The Second Amendment doesn't apply to California. And we have so many crazy laws. And, you know, we have 12% of the nation's population, but we have 43% of its welfare cases. We have 25% of the illegal aliens in the entire United States live in California. We have several trillion dollars in debt, depending upon who you talk to. Our governor is running around the world like a tin pot dictator, violating Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3 all the time, making agreements with foreign powers. Well, you know, ask yourself, how would this country work if all 50 governors were running around the world making deals with China and making deals with France and making deals with Canada? How would our country function? What message would that send to our enemies? But yet we suffer with that in California every day. We have laws in California that the legislature has exempted itself from, but yet the people are still expected to follow those laws. So that's rule by law, not rule of law. We live in a failed socialist state in California, and we are going to do something about this one way or another.
How close do you think you are to kind of an Illinois situation? You know, Puerto Rico went bankrupt. Illinois is bankrupt, but they can't officially say they're bankrupt without an act of Congress. But they are. I talked to a state rep from Illinois, and he said, yeah, well, you know, 100% is going to, you know, 100% of our income is going to pensions. So we are in effect bankrupt. How close are you guys down in California right now? How bad is it?
Well, it's kind of funny because you can't get that information out of the state. There is no one place you can go in California's budgetary process to find out who they owe, how much money they're getting, who they're giving the money to, and who they're getting the money from. But I can tell you this, something is wrong because in the legislature, we just raised the gas tax the highest in the nation, yet our roads are the worst in the nation. Another thing they're looking at now is service tax. Whenever you go to the barber, you're going to have to pay a tax or call a plumber. And the last thing that they're coming up with is something called an equity tax, where it's going to cost you $3 a day because you're so lucky you live in a house that someone handed you, presumably, according to them, and you need to pay for all the homeless problems in California. So for $3 a day that supposedly comes out of this magic thing called the equity in your house, then we can solve all of these other problems. But quite frankly, most of that money goes into the general fund. And every time they smell $50 billion that the taxpayer still has, they just raise the taxes. So until someone says no, they can keep raising taxes.
I noticed on your Facebook stuff that there's kind of this, not just a movement is, you know, a bunch of people getting together and being organized about this, but you're actually getting into the political sphere and trying to get folks of like mind into local and state elected office. I mean, how has it been going for you? What is the reception and what are some tips you can give to us up here to help make that happen in our neck of the woods? Because, boy, downtown Seattle is just crushing the rest of the state.
Well, they are, and they can because of the way, because of Reynolds versus Sims and Gray versus Sanders and Baker versus Carr. They can do that because the Supreme Court changed the Constitution without the benefit of the amendment process in those three court cases. And our court case is going to overturn all of that. And it's going to suck the money out of the politics, and it's going to restore this state to what we hope will be one assemblyman for 2,500 people and one state senator for 6,000. Now, as you can imagine, in California, we'll have 14,000 assembly people. That should break this government in half. And our other alternative would be form a smaller governmental unit to where it is not beyond you to represent the people who created the government. And what we forget is that people created the government, not the other way around. Government serves people, not the other way around. How have we come to this place where we are subjects to the will of our masters in Salem or in Seattle or in Los Angeles or in San Francisco? We allowed it. And when you form strong county committees, then you have the political organization to elect local officials. That's what we've done in Siskiyou County. We have 4 out of 5 of our commissioners now are real constitutional thinkers, and that's enough. All you need is 3. And we're teaching other counties how to do that, and we have Jefferson people running for office in a lot of counties now.
I love it, because that is what America was founded on, seizing back those positions that have been ceded to the enemy, or ceded, I should say, to the left, which is the enemy, ceded to the people that just really want to impose tyranny. They may couch it in all these kind of different terms of social justice and all this, but they really want to impose tyranny. I want to shift gears on you a little bit. You know, when we talk about that and you do reach critical mass, how eventually could the state be split? We've had this, you know, I've had some people say, oh, it's unconstitutional to split a state. Clearly, Article 4, Section 3 says otherwise. What is your kind of idea and your plan if you eventually reach that critical mass to split the state?
Well, what we hope to achieve in the court case is this. We hope to achieve a settlement that is literally untenable for the state of California. If we achieve the representative ratio that the founding fathers of California not only imagined but instituted and was in process for a couple of decades before the government turned to the people and said, oh, by the way, you're going to have to share now. We're not going to represent all of you. If we achieve that, one assemblyman for every 2,500 and one state senator for every 6,000, that'll be 14,000 assembly people and 7,000 senators in California. We think that the state will come to us and say, gee, fellas, that ain't happening. What's it going to take to make you go away? And our alternative settlement will be through the legislative process. You have your mono party, vote for an Article 4 state split, and once we've achieved that, we'll drop our lawsuit, and you won't have to have 8,000 assembly people biting each other's heads off in Los Angeles.
How do you answer people that would say, you know, the state of Jefferson, because they say this too with Eastern Washington, you know, Eastern Washington would be the poorest state in the country. And I'll mention a few figures. You know, we have about the same population as the entire state of Idaho, and we raise about the same amount of revenue right now without changing anything right now, about the same amount of revenue. How do you address that concern that you'd be the poorest state in the entire country?
Well, people say that. You know, the two biggest objections we get are it can't be done. They don't say why it can't be done or how it can't be done. They just say it can't be done. And they say, what are we going to do without the money that the rich people in the cities give us? And so my answer to that is, number one, I don't remember one single founding father in 1775 screaming, what are we going to do without the king's money? How will we possibly make it if we have to stand on our own 2 feet? That was not part of that equation. And Samuel Adams said, if you value your money more than your liberty and your safety more than the animating contest of freedom, then crouch down and lick the hand that feeds you. And there was more to it, but you get the point. What we have in Jefferson, and I think what you have in Eastern Washington, is this, and simply this. We are not poor. We've been impoverished by the regulatory processes of the state that owns us. And we're not citizens here. We're subjects here. We gave up our citizenship a long, long time ago. And so what we say is the worst day economically in the state of Jefferson will be the last day they call us Californians, because there's no place for up to go from there. Once we're allowed to responsibly use our resources, and once we're allowed to responsibly mine, farm, create wood products, and create renewable energy, which we have the potential for in absolute abundance in rural resource counties, we won't have to worry about the money. In fact, our worst problem is going to be managing growth, because everybody tells us, if you get this done, I'm moving there and I'm moving my family there too. We have people all the time saying, if you get this done, I'm moving my business business there. I think you'd have the same problem. Your problem would be how to manage growth, because as a free state, your population would be a net increase, not a decline.
You know, that is so great that you said that. I have actually heard that from business owners. They will not come out publicly, but they say they would move their entire manufacturing processes, all of their business, including their management, all of it, everything, to Eastern Washington if we got it done, to the State of Liberty. And you know, you're right, because people want freedom.
Everybody wants liberty. There are some people that are too afraid to say it, but I can't think of one person. I've never asked one single person, would you rather be a slave or free, that says, oh, I'll choose slavery and subjugation every time. No one says that. They don't know how to do it. That's what we're here for, is to teach people and get this thing going. They don't know how to do it, but they know they need it. They know they can't live without it. They know they owe it to their children. You know, we have one job as citizens, secure liberty for our posterity. How are we doing at that job? And if the answer is not well, then we as the adults of this nation, we have a task in front of us.
We do indeed. And it's almost like we're going to have regions of freedom. And they're starting to crop up quite a bit across the country. And I actually saw recently a map on Zero Hedge. I think it was from an English newspaper that showed how Europe has these autonomy movements happening everywhere. It was dozens and dozens and dozens of them. I think this really is the wave of the future, don't you? Kind of this decentralization and protection of freedom at the most local level.
Well, I think it is, and I think as people wake up, they're starting to see what they've lost, and they're starting to realize they did it to themselves, and they're the only ones that can fix it. Now, you know, I don't want to sound like Eeyore the donkey. The bright spot of this is we can change all of this. We can fix it all. We have the power. We've always had it. The people are the repository of all the political power in this nation, and you read the Declaration of Independence if you doubt what I'm saying. And the California Constitution, Article 2, Section 1, says all just political power resides with the people, and it is their right to alter or reform government any time the public good demands it. We have the jurisdiction, we have the sovereignty, we have the ability. All we have to do is use it.
That's all we have to do. And get people up off the couch. How have you seen the influence of social media and the internet in influencing the movement? I mean, how has it been for you with that?
Well, it's good, of course. Now, I don't participate in that because I don't know how it works, and quite frankly, I'm too busy. But, you know, we have people that do that, and, you know, they're constantly bugging everyone, all the leaders, that, you know, make a 2-minute video on your phone and we'll post it. And I don't even know how to do that. So we're going to stop by the junior high, and one of the kids is going to show me how to do that. But, you know, I think social media is important because it's a way to reach a vast number of people without going through the mainstream. And let me tell you, mainstream politicians of both parties and the mainstream media hate liberty with every fiber in their being, and I'm including Republicans in that. They will swear to support and defend the Constitution and vote against it every single time. We are on our own here, folks. No one is going to ride in and save us. It is up to us to make sure that the people who have sworn to serve us obey their masters, and their masters are the people. That's the dynamic we need to change. Because remember, a government afraid of its people is democracy. People afraid of their government is tyranny.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because the millennial generation, a lot of people are very fearful that they've been indoctrinated into an anti-American worldview and, frankly, an anti-Christian worldview in many respects. How do you address the younger folks when you talk about the state of Jefferson?
You know, this is how I do it. I say, I am a Christian. I believe that Jesus is Lord. But it's not a pill I'm selling. Here, if you can't follow this as a Christian, follow it as a legal argument. And I can prove this in 10,000 documents, 10,000 speeches, and 10,000 letters. This is a Christian nation founded on Christian principles. And the state in which I live, based on the working documents from the 1879 convention and the 1849 convention, this is a Christian state formed by by Christian men and women along Christian principles. Well, that tells us something. God is the most free expression in the universe. No one tells God what to do, and no one can make him stop if they wanted to. And as such, you were created in God's image. That's the legal argument. And if you were created in God's image, you were created as a free expression of God. In other words, you have inalienable rights placed in you by your Creator at the moment of your creation. Now, a liberty unused is a liberty lost. So you have these liberties. No one can take them from you. They are above the policy decisions of government. They are not on the table unless you allow it. And that's what we've allowed. And what we simply need to do is re-express our sovereignty and then ensure that the people who have sworn to serve us know that we have jurisdiction to get rid of them anytime we want to. And then we need to use that jurisdiction to do that.
That very well said. And if people want to go get more information, maybe they want to check up on the issues or sign up for your newsletter, where can they go online to do that?
Well, they can go to soj51.org, and that has all the news and information and the latest news on the lawsuit. And if you can spare a couple of bucks, lawsuits are expensive, and ours is going to be no different. We expect it's going to cost $1 million to get this thing done, and we're earning it $2 at a time. We have no political party. We have no big donors. No rich people support us. No political parties support us. This is a grassroots movement of the people. And if any of your groups would like to hear someone yammer about these things and give some concrete ideas about how we've done what we've done and hopefully help you to do the same thing, we have people who are available to come and speak, and by the way, they do so free of charge. Our mission is liberty. We're not looking for money, power, or position. So if you put together a town hall, we can send somebody to talk to your folks and teach them how we've done what we've done so far.
I'm sure
so. What worked and what didn't work is very important as well.
Yeah, I'm sure some of the listeners are going to take you up on that, absolutely. And I would be remiss if I didn't ask if you had a podcast or any sort of a radio show for the state of Jefferson and that, you know, is maybe put on a weekly basis or monthly basis.
You know, there's a radio show on Sunday mornings. It's called Jefferson State of Mind, and it's streamed live I think it's KCNR 1460, and it's on the internet. So people want to, I think it's between 9 and 10, and I usually call in once a week. I don't have a radio show. People are bugging me to do it, but I just haven't figured out how I could pull that off yet.
Well, I think you need one. I would be more than happy to help you make that a reality because it's so encouraging to people to hear about this and that it's not just some pie in the sky thing that is actually achievable. And it's actually achievable in most of our lifetimes if we have the will and we mobilize enough and we do some of these strategic leveraging that you've been talking about to force decisions in the right direction.
You know, it is achievable. We are going to win. We're going to win our court case as well. I have to say, the government, when they approach us, they are so arrogant and so lazy in their responses and their arguments that we think that so far anyway, barring some unforeseen incident, they've painted themselves into a corner from which there is no escape in this court case. We think we're going to win the court case. If we can afford to pay the lawyers, we're going to win. And let me tell you, that is going to yank the rug out from under status quo politicians all over this nation. And what we as people need to do is drive a truck through the hole.
I love it. Amen. Well, as we're wrapping the show up right now, if you could, you know, I always like to kind of imagine what a state would look like, what Liberty State would look like, what the state of Jefferson would look like. So if you could, for a second, paint that picture for everybody. You know, imagine what the state of Jefferson would look like.
The state of Jefferson will have bottom-up government. In other words, every community will have a representative in the assembly. Every county will have equal representation in the Senate, just like the federal model of government that we have now. Politicians will have to post their votes online so that you can look at their record, and it's going to be cheap and it's going to be easy to get rid of a bum. In other words, if we elect someone and we realize we made a mistake, it's going to be cheap and easy to replace the guy at the the next election cycle. The state of Jefferson will have a zero corporate tax rate. Our gun laws will be this: the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, if you make a mistake with your gun, there will be a consequence to pay. But our Second Amendment is all the gun law we need. The right to free speech is inviolable. We're going to also break the stranglehold that lawyers have on the legal system. You will not have to be a lawyer to be a judge in the state of Jefferson. We're going to reinstitute the justice of the peace system so that people in your community can resolve disputes between neighbors, and it'll be a guy that knows both of you. I mean, those are just some of the ideas that we have. We want a pass-through account where a county, you pay your taxes to the county, and instead of giving the state all the money and they give you back what they think you need to live, you're going to give the state what it needs to keep the rest to run your community. Idea institution.
Well, Mark Baird, thank you very much for once again joining me on Patriot Radio. The state of Jefferson, if you guys go first, remember us, and we'll remember you if we go first, okay?
Well, what we say is, whether it's the state of Liberty or Jefferson, the time has come for 51.
Amen. All right, love you guys and what you're doing down there. We'll have you back on again. Lord bless, okay?
God bless you, Matt. Bye.
All right, if you want to check it out again, SOJ 51, you can take a look at it online. They've got a great website. They got a bunch of young folks helping them out with the website. It's just beautiful vistas of Northern California and facts about what a new state would look like as compared to being the heel of California right now, or under the heel of California right now. And the same thing is here for us here in Liberty State. You know, people say it can't happen. Yes, it can. And if you really want freedom, instead of complaining about the bureaucrats intruding into every area of your life or trying to control you or taking more of your money out of your pocket or indoctrinating your children or trying to just implement ridiculously stupid policies like no use of our forest lands, which result in catastrophic wildfire, if you're sick of that, imagine a state without property tax. Imagine a state with less regulation. Imagine a state where your family can have a business. Imagine a state where freedom is protected, not attacked. And if you want that, then join the movement. And again, you can visit State of Jefferson, SOJ 51. You can also visit libertystate.org. Join the movement for freedom. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for joining me on Patriot Radio today. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.